Welcome, everybody, to the SI Media Podcast. This is your host, Jimmy Traina. Week three, Jim Miller, week one. Last week, roundtable with Andrew Marchand and Chad Finn. This episode will feature two interviews. First up, Kevin Burkhardt of Fox Sports. Really, really good conversation with Kevin about his career and how he started out and then getting to Fox and doing NFL games and studio for MLB. And then after that, since it's WrestleMania week, I know it's not a media guest, but branching out a little bit here, it's WrestleMania week. Roman Reigns is in the main event against Brock Lesnar, and we have a very fun conversation with Roman where I had one of the most embarrassing moments of my podcast career, had a really horrible blunder, and Roman let me know it and refused to let me edit it out, so you will hear all of that. Couple of media things going on just quickly. The Thursday night game looks like for Fox, it'll be Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews. Andrew Marchand, who was on last week on the SI Media Podcast, broke that story. We talked to Burkhardt about that, but I think that's a good move for Fox. Those guys, everyone knows them, and it's not going to be a controversial booth. A lot of work for them, but I think that's a decent move by Fox. The other media stories, Get Up, ESPN's morning show, which we talked about a lot last week with Andrew and Chad Finn. Rough ratings for the first episode. Hard to judge anything off one episode, but I wrote this on SI.com. The hosts are making $14.5 million combined. You'd have to think ESPN desperately wants those ratings to get up. And no pun intended. That was really terrible. I did not mean that. And I'm not sure how that happens given the debut sampling. So that's an interesting story to keep an eye on. Those are the two biggies from this week in sports media, I think. And we'll talk more about those on another roundtable in a few weeks. But like I said, this episode, Kevin Burkhardt, first up from Fox Sports, Roman Reigns from the WWE after that on the SI Media Podcast. Here's Kevin Burkhardt. Do you ever get hate on Twitter? I never see it for you.
I guess, you know, it's been more and more. I was lucky when I was with the Mets. I really didn't get any. I mean, you get the occasional, but, you know, not bad. Now it's like, I don't know. I'm almost to the point where I'm kind of over Twitter, to be honest. Like it's like, yeah, you know, after a football game, you get the usual, you suck, you hate my team, you suck, you're clearly rooting for the other team, fuck you, you know, it's like, all right.
Yeah, you know, well, it's Twitter.
Hate to break it to you, I could care less who wins the game. I just want a good game, but, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Have you been getting lessons from Joe Buck on how to handle it? Because when I had him on the podcast right around the Super Bowl, and he seems like he's, you know, it does some psychological damage to him, he said, but he's learned how to deal with it a lot better. Sounds like you have the right attitude as well.
Yeah, you know, I just don't care. I mean, yeah. I really don't care. I mean, look, I like interacting with the fans. I really do. And I'd say most of them are really cool and, you know, like to have a conversation or whatever. I try to get back to most people when I can because I appreciate them reaching out. But it's like, some people are so nasty and so negative, and it's like, my God, you know, did I kidnap your dog or something? It's so weird.
Yes.
So that's why, like, I just don't need the negativity. So there's just times now where I just don't even look at my mentions because it's just like, I don't need it. I don't need it in my life, you know, right. But I just try not to let it bother me.
It's funny that you have that. It's funny that you say that about Twitter. And you, like I said, you're one of the more popular announcers. So you got MLB and NFL for Fox, but let's go back before we get to Fox. I was looking at your Wikipedia page, and it says that you got your start by doing play-by-play for Nintendo games. Was that like...
That's 100% true. I mean, they probably got that from some article at some point. Andrew Marchand of the Post wrote one of the early articles on me when I was working for the Mets. He might have had it in there. I don't remember. But... yeah, that is legitimately true. You know, I was a sports – I loved sports growing up. I wasn't that great playing them. And so I was like, well, I really like announcing them. And you know, I was just like – I loved announcers when I was a kid. Like, you know, Matt and Summerall were everything, you know, to me and in our house. Like, we were a big football house and, you know, we were a big Mets house. So Bob Murphy and later Gary Cohen on the radio. And, those guys made an impression on me. So – when I was a kid, yeah, I mean, basically the setup was, I don't know if you remember, Jimmy, I love your stuff. I know you got some old school in you. Do you remember the game Baseball Stars?
Baseball Stars. That one I don't remember.
It was actually started on Neo Geo, and then it came over to Nintendo, and you can actually build your own team.
See, I'm so
awesome.
I'm so old, I had Intellivision.
I remember Intellivision,
sure.
Totally.
I loved Intellivision. Yeah, because it had the number. Intellivision made me feel like an NFL coach, because you would call the plays with, like, putting in a number code, and you felt like an offensive coordinator. But Nintendo, I mean, I remember RBI Baseball was the game, obviously, or that.
Yeah. But Lou's got it. This game was basically you win games, and then you get money, and you could build your team. So anyway, myself, my brother, who's 5 years younger, and my best buddy Dan at the time in school, we would come home from school, and I'd have, like, the old dual deck cassette recorders, you know?
Wow.
And so we would call the game. And then I was always inspired by, like, Mets Extra, or, you know, when I was a kid, I would listen to Nets games, too. And I'll never forget, Bob Papa, you know, I got into the postgame show once and talked to Bob Papa, and it was such a thrill. And coincidentally, Bob was really good to me when I was just trying to figure it out. I would call him, and he'd call me back and give me tips.
Wow.
At the side. Nice. But anyway, so we tried to emulate the postgame show. So we'd do the game, and then we would kind of say, okay, back in the second inning, and then we'd rewind the original cassette, and then we would record it onto a second cassette
to
make a postgame show. We were such nerds, it was beyond belief. But
I used to do play-by-play when I was playing, like, Double Dribble, but, you know, in my bedroom, you know, with my brother, and there were no recording devices. The fact that did you use these tapes into, you know, I don't know, college radio or anything like that, or they were just for fun?
They were just for fun. I mean, at that point, I had no idea, like, I was really going to be able to do it, but they were, I don't think anyone has ever heard them but my parents and my family.
Now, like I said, you're doing MLB and NFL, different gigs, studio for MLB, although you did games along the way, and you do the games for NFL. Did you have a sport, when you were that age doing the games on Nintendo, did you, in your head, have a sport that where you said, when I grow up, I want to be, like, when I was a kid, I wanted to be the play-by-play voice of the Yankees. Didn't work out that way. I'm glad Sterling is. But what did you have a specific sport back then that was the sport you wanted to do when you grew up?
Well, number one was the NFL. I mean, you know, Sundays, you know, in our house, we would, you know, my mom would bring us to church. We'd go to the deli after. We'd get the cold cuts. We'd go home, watch, like, all the NFL, and Matt and Summerall to me were just, you know, they were gods. And so, you know, I grew up an Eagles fan, even though my whole family's Giants fans. So, you know, I always dreamt about doing NFL games. So that was amazing. And then, yeah, you know, I would fall asleep listening to, you know, Bob Murphy. So yep. The NFL overall and doing Mets games, those are the two things that I always dreamt about doing. Those were the two specific things.
Now, you seem to have that, you know, this is a crazy business, especially on the TV side, which I don't know that well, obviously. But, you know, I've been doing web stuff my whole career, but it's a crazy business, sports media overall, and then TV, I think, is especially crazy. But you seem to have one of those rare stories where it's sort of, and tell me if I'm wrong, but, like, you know, you did the play-by-play on the Nintendo, you went to college, you had gigs, you were selling cars on the side, you did radio on the side, you worked at FAN a little bit, and it was like the build-up and the progression. Or was it really a struggle for you? Or was it you just kept building, making contacts, and then here you are now as, you know, one of the top voices?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if struggle is the right word, because it wasn't like I was digging ditches, man. You know, I mean, there were years I was making 18 grand a year, and, you know, thank God for my wife, who actually, like, had a real producing job and put food on the table. But, you know, yes, it was hard. And I think the hardest thing, I think, for me, and I always try to convey this, because, you know, when I talk to kids in school or something like that, because I truly felt this and I truly still do believe it. The hardest thing is not losing faith. Like, if you really, truly think you're good and you think you can do it, and I always thought I could, and you have to have a confidence, right? Otherwise, how can you ever succeed? So, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just not losing hope, because it's like, you know, you send out your tape, you're calling people, you're trying to get, obviously, jobs, but at that point, you're just trying to get anybody to call you back to help you improve. Okay, you know, am I any good? Do I have a chance? What can I do better? And it's just so hard. That is the tough thing mentally. It's like, you know, I always thought I could do it, and I always thought I was good enough to do it. And if you just keep the faith and kind of keep chasing your dream, so to speak, as cheesy as that may sound, that's what kept me going. You know, I love what I do. There's not a day that goes by that I realize how lucky I am. And look, that doesn't mean that there aren't days where you're tired or you're stressed, but like, I am so fortunate. But at the same time, I worked hard to get here. You know, you just need along the way. I mean, I could point each step of the way for me. There has to be people who open doors and believe in you. And I can go down a list of, I don't know, 10, 15 people for sure who I would not be here without them. So I think that's the biggest thing I always tell people is just hang in. And, you know, for me, yeah, it took a while. But you know what, Jimmy, I don't think I'd be as good if I got this job, you know, when I was, I don't know, 23. You know, I just don't. I mean, I think I got a lot better along the way. And so I'm kind of happy how my journey went, so to speak.
What was your biggest break in terms of when you thought, okay, I'm going to be in this business? Was it SNY? Was it before then?
I think my biggest break was FAN.
Right.
Because, you know, even though I wanted to do TV, look, FAN was iconic. You know, obviously, as you know, I know you're a huge fan. So getting to work with those guys was amazing for me because I listened to them all the time. But that was like, you know, at the time I was doing things for WCBS in New York, 880, the AM station, which is a monster news station. But, you know, sports is not a priority there, obviously. And when I got on the Fan, that's when I finally started to realize that, wow, people are hearing me. And, you know, people would hear my work and, like, think it's good or think this and that. And that exposure started to open doors for me.
And I remember Russo loved you.
Yes. Yes. The first time I was at the Fan for a little bit, but I was doing different things and, you know, hosting 3 a.m. on Saturday morning, whatever it was, you know, those shifts. And then the first time I did updates on Russo's show by himself, his Saturday morning show, he was, this bedtime guy's very good. You know, I don't know, you know. And so obviously that was huge. I mean, I can never thank him enough for that. And, you know, I mean, I love Chris, you know, and Chris and Mike were both great to me. I mean, you know, I was fortunate, but Dog, yeah, he went over the top over that first one. And you know what? It didn't hurt me, Jimmy.
Of course.
I mean, it doesn't hurt when the dog is yelling over the airways, hey, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. You
know, part of it was, you know how much he loves to bust chops, but it was busting the other people's chops who were there as much as really thinking that I had a chance. And that was, you know, that meant the world to me. It was awesome.
And he's still busting chops. He's in this big feud with Boomer Esiason. I don't know if you followed it, but
I saw it. You know, you know what? Listen, I love Dog. And you know what? We talk about this all the time. Look, I'm a Jersey guy. I know I'm an L.A. guy now, but Jersey is, you know, who I am. Everybody takes everything so serious nowadays.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's like, gosh, it's just chop busting. It's nothing, I don't know.
It did. I mean, when he said it, you guys laughing like a hyena like he usually does. You have to know it's sort of in jest, but I don't know. It's good for Dog that he's immersed in this feud. I'll say that because he loves it. He thrives on it.
Well, that's it. I have friends at both places, and but I don't know. I saw your clips that you posted this morning. I don't know the genesis of it. If there's something really there, but I do think Dog's just busting chops.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. I'm on the other coast right now.
And I want to talk about that going from LA to from Jersey to LA. But let me so FAN and then SNY in New York, the local Met station where it was one of those things where I felt like the whole time you were there, everyone knew you wouldn't be there long. You were destined for like something bigger. And you were there for what, a year when everyone knew you were going to Fox or maybe a few months before you got the Fox gig.
I was there at SNY. I was there for 8 years in totality, believe it or not.
Was it that long you were there? Of total, wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah. I had done some baseball games for Fox, you know, I don't know, maybe year four that I was there, something along those lines. And I did start to work for Fox while I was there. Like, I did NFL, I think 2 years while I was working with the Mets, I did the NFL for Fox. And then I became full-time for Fox. So maybe that's what you're thinking.
I'm thinking about when you sort of. So you did the sidelines for SNY. Sidelines. I don't know if that's. I guess sideline reporter for 8 years for SNY. That seems like a long time for that gig.
Yeah. I mean, it was. It was great. I mean, the job was great. I loved it. I didn't love the schedule. I mean, the baseball season just destroys you. Yeah. And, schedule sucks. I'm sorry. I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't love the job, because I love the job. But if you want a life, you want to see your family, you don't have one.
Right.
I'm fortunate that it worked out that Fox was, that it turned out that they liked me and we were kind of headed towards a deal there. And I was obviously, everything was great from my end, and the timing and everything was perfect. But if that wasn't the case, I don't think I would have been back. I mean, I think I was pretty done.
Yeah.
with that baseball grind. And it's a real thing. I mean, it's one of those things. You talk to people, like, well, how can you be tired or how can you be stressed? Listen, just because the job's amazing, just because you love it, doesn't mean you're not fried.
Right.
So. It was great, but I think even if the Fox thing wasn't on the table, I think I was done.
That's why I always say, and I'm clearly 100% biased. I love John Sterling. I give him a free pass on all his nonsense. I'm a diehard. but I think that even if you hate John Sterling and you don't like the shtick, how can you not respect the fact that this guy is going to be 80 years old in July and has not missed one inning of one Yankee game since 1989? To me, it's one of the most remarkable stats in sports history.
Well, first, I love him. He's great, and I'm a fan, and he's a great guy, and he's always been nice to me. And I'll put that out there. Second, I'm with you. I mean, it is an unbelievable accomplishment. I mean, people are like, oh, well, you fly in the charter and you get nice hotels. Yes, you do, but that doesn't mean it's not hard to work, 160 straight days. He is, and anybody in that mold. Same, that's what made Vin so amazing among everything else out here. I mean, obviously, Vin was one of the best to ever do it, if not the best ever. But the fact that he's able to do it, at that age, it's incredible. I mean, it really is amazing.
Not an inning missed. So, SNY, then you go to Fox. And before we get into the Fox and calling MLB and doing MLB Studio and calling NFL, how hard was the transition to go from Jersey to L.A. for you? If at all.
Yeah, it wasn't very hard.
because of the weather? Everyone always says it's because of the weather, but I don't know. The weather wouldn't be enough for me to, just abandon New York, Kevin.
Listen, I mean, it's a totally different lifestyle, and obviously, my wife and I's family is all in Jersey. So, friends and family you move away from, that's hard. You can't, and you're not close. You can't hop on a flight and go there for a night and come back. But in terms of lifestyle and, the way things are here, if you've got to uproot your family and move to a completely different place, it's amazing. I mean, yeah, the weather is an enormous part of it. I mean, for the most part, it's 75 degrees every day here. It's definitely a different lifestyle. Some things took getting used to, but I love it, man. I really do.
So right from the bat, you loved L.A. There was no difficult transition then.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's certain things that I miss. There's certain things of, people being in a little bit of a rush to get things done. That doesn't exist here. pale ham, egg, and cheese, can't find that here. Right. I mean, there's certain things that are what they are. But generally, yeah, I mean, I kind of fell in love with it right away. I'm a beach guy, so it's pretty easy to find a good beach out here.
Now, as an announcer, do you care about the fact that in L.A. that – the reputation as a sports fan is that they're not exactly as passionate as the New York, New Jersey fan, or you don't care. You're just there to call games.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's obviously a difference. I mean, the East Coast, I don't think, when you're talking about New York, Philly, Boston, I don't think there's anything like that personally. Maybe I'm biased because I grew up there and I went to many more games there than anywhere else. But I've been around the country now a lot. I've done games everywhere. I think fans are passionate about certain things here. And look, after living here, I get it. Sunday afternoon or whatever it is, it's like, oh, it's 7:00, let's go sailing instead of going to the game. I totally get it. And the other thing is the traffic. Look, traffic is bad everywhere. I don't think it's any worse than when I lived in Jersey and had to commute to Queens. I mean, that was a nightmare too. So
right.
It is what it is. But the one thing I never understood were the Dodger games. I'm like, man, this place is great. The stadium's amazing. Like, it's the experience. How come people come so late and leave so early? And then I tried to do it with my son, and I left early. I just didn't get there till late. I totally started to get why that happened. Yeah. It's just a nut house, like, where it is. So, but look, I think it's pretty clear. You know, New York, Philly, Boston. I think that's just a different animal.
Yeah. So Fox, you do the number two game on Fox each week for the NFL, MLB. You're doing the studio MLB stuff for Fox and FS1. Do you consider this the ideal time for Kevin Burkhardt, or in an ideal world, are you doing baseball play-by-play and NFL play-by-play? Would you rather be in the NFL studio, or do you like doing studio for one, play-by-play for the other?
That's a good question. I never want to be in the studio for the NFL. I love doing games.
Okay.
And that's always been my number one thing, and now that I'm doing it, I hope I don't give it up. I mean, I love it. I love Sundays so much. And for baseball, you know, I like doing play-by-play too, and I hope to get more of that, and I have a little bit more of that this year. But I really enjoy the studio. In fact, I've enjoyed it a lot more than I even thought I would. I think baseball is the sport where the studio, I think it really works, because there's so much you can do. Jimmy, you know, you're a huge baseball guy. You're a huge Yankee. I mean, there's so much minutiae you could talk about. So I've actually enjoyed it more than I thought. And I actually do enjoy having the kind of balance where I do a little bit of everything. I think it keeps me fresh. I think it's fun. And I really appreciated that being out here. I like how they're cool to use me doing multiple things. And I like doing that. I've always liked doing that.
And that MLB gig for you is a big gig, because they always have the World Series and you're there, you know, pre and post on the biggest stage. So that's a lot of viewers watching that.
Hey, listen, all I know is this. I enjoy it. I think what we do is, I think we put on good shows, at least I hope. But I mean, the last 2 years, I got to hand over the World Series trophy. It's like insane, right? I mean, like, and I'll never forget what it was like at Wrigley when they won the pennant 2 years ago. That was a career highlight. That was something else. So, yeah, I mean, I you look at it like that, and I'm one of the luckiest guys on earth, I think.
Back-to-back World Series at seven games, too, is nice.
They've both been great. Yeah. And the ratings have been good. I think people are – I truthfully think the Cubs brought people back into the sport. I really do.
You were going to work last year with Cutler before he decided to go back into the NFL and sign with the Dolphins. All the reports were that Jay Cutler was going to be great in the booth. What did we miss? You did test games with him. What did you see there? What did we miss out on with him not going to the booth?
I think the biggest thing for Jay, and this is true for a lot of people, by the way. So, you know, I went down when, you know, yes, I did auditions with him, and then our crew went to Nashville to hang with him, to get to know him, and we had a great time. And I think the biggest thing for Jay is, and I guess we won't know this, if the Jay who, you know, we were hanging out at dinner with and having a bottle of wine and having laughs with and was very open and honest about the NFL was the guy doing the games, he would have been unbelievable. Would he have been that guy? I don't know. I think it certainly lent itself where he could have been, and I was certainly optimistic about it. But, you know, that's the hardest thing, is when you are an ex-player or an ex-coach, and look, you don't have to be critical and you know, insult people's families here, but you just have to call the action as you see it, as an expert, what your thoughts are. And I think that is the hardest thing for a lot of these guys, to understand that you don't have to destroy somebody to be critical and say what's wrong or say what you're seeing or say what, you know what I mean? There's a fine line. I can tell you this. He was exceptionally smart and saw everything. And so if we were able to get that out of him, yeah, I think he would have been a lot of fun. I don't think he would have been afraid to criticize people at all, but I don't know if he's going to go back down that road. So I guess we'll see.
And if you're a sports media nerd, you feel like you missed out sort of on what would have been the Cutler-Romo thing, because obviously Romo came out of the gate and got glowing reviews, and there would have probably been a little bit of a rivalry there, not between them, but that obviously the comparisons would have been made by people in the media, and maybe it was better Cutler got away from that because Romo got so many positive reviews.
Yeah, I think it would have been fun. I think there would have been a competition, actually, like not directly, but 100%. Like, you know, you're talking two new quarterbacks who are doing it. Obviously, Tony is in the A role, but you know, I'll put it this way. I was looking forward to it. I liked Jay, and I was looking forward to it. I didn't know him well before getting to know him last year. I think he would have been good. So I don't know. Maybe another time.
It was supposed to be you, Jay Cutler, Charles Davis, and then Cutler went back to the Dolphins. So then it was just you and Charles Davis. Do you – obviously, you're going to do whatever Fox tells you, so I get that. But if you were in charge, do you have a preference on two-person booth or three-person booth?
Yeah, I absolutely hate a three-person booth, to be honest.
I do. As a fan, I do also, so I'm happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, I hate it. I mean, when they did it last year, I totally get why, because you have a guy who doesn't know how to do anything, and you know, you're having Charles, who's so good and who's a veteran and is a great teammate, so I get it. You know, you're trying to throw Jay or whoever in that instance a lifeline. I mean, you know, Troy was in a three-man booth when he started too, I think, right? Wasn't he with Collinsworth when he started?
Wasn't there a Sims Collinsworth booth with Emberg, maybe two? They were all part of three-man booths, I think, when they start out.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys have done it. You know, I feel like Moose Johnson did it too. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, with Siragusa. Yeah.
Correct. So I get it. I totally get the thought process there. But generally, I hate three-man booths. I think it lends itself to too much talking. I think it lends itself to, it's just harder. Now, that being said, there are some that really are great. And I think for baseball, it's more pliable than it is for football. I worked with one in New York. I mean, I think Gary Keith and Ron in New York are fantastic together.
A little different on baseball.
I agree. Think, yeah. I think it's different. I think I bottom line is, look, I don't like it. If they tell me to do it, I'll do it, but I don't like it, and that's that.
Yeah. It sounds like Fox is going to go with Buck Aikman and Aaron Andrews for the Thursday night game. Did you want – if they came to you for that gig, would you have been up for doing two games a week? Because they're still going to do – I know a lot of the Sunday games, maybe not all of their Sunday games. Did you want to be a player for that gig, or are you happy to just do your one game a week?
Well, I think if Joe and Troy and Aaron weren't going to do it, then yeah, of course I would love to have been involved in that. I never knew one way or the other what was going on. I think they were trying to figure it out. Obviously, they were after Peyton. I didn't really know what their plans were. But if Joe and Troy weren't going to do it, I would have loved to be involved in it. I mean, it makes total sense for them to do it. I mean, they spent all this money on this shiny new package. They are a number one crew. They should do it. I don't know if they're planning to have them double up all the time, some of the time. I can only tell you this. Prepping for one NFL game is a ton of work.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, Jim Dance and Al Michaels and those guys, they've doubled up and they've done it now on CBS and NBC. It is incredibly taxing because to do it right, there's just an amount of work you have to put in. And, yeah, you can do it. And if they asked me to do it, I certainly would have done it. But it is not easy. Normally we're getting into cities either Friday morning for a Sunday game. And then at home you're doing the other preps. You can imagine, well, if you figure that out, you're basically on the road for 6 days.
Right.
To do that, you need help. There's definitely people who are helping you out because it's just a lot on the plate. It's hard to explain without going through it, but football prep is a different animal.
Yeah. I think from what I heard, I mean, there's only 11 Thursday night games. It's not 16. So, and I think Fox is going to.
Well, that's a factor. I mean, I'm sure if they could double up, why wouldn't they? There's, you know, Joe and Troy, right?
Joe and Troy, they're the number one team, obviously. So it makes sense Fox to use them. try to give me a range of sports. Who are your favorite announcers today? Not when you were growing up, but today. Give me like five men or women you love listening to do a game. Putting you right on the spot.
So, I mean, look, I'll start with Joe. I think Joe is fantastic, and I think he is one of the greatest to ever do it. We started this interview talking about Twitter hate and stuff, and I don't understand when I don't get when he gets Twitter hate or trolled or whatever. I love listening to Joe. So I'll start with that. Elsewhere, I think Tirico is fantastic. I love how versatile he is. I'm a huge fan. How can you not be of Al Michaels? Actually, sidebar, I coached his grandkid in rec hoops a couple years ago in L.A. That was pretty funny.
That is a good sidebar.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, there's so many guys. I mean, Breen on basketball, I think, is absolutely outstanding. Gary Cohen on baseball, and, you know, I'm obviously, but I just think he is so damn good. On baseball, I'd have to think. I mean, there's probably a laundry list. I mean, I know how hard it is to do, so I'm a fan of a lot of people, but I'll start with that list.
You brought up Al, and I realized it when you said it. You're not one of the NFL play-by-play guys, I think, who brings up point spreads. Can I get you to change that?
Well, you know, I can't. You know, look, Al is great at it. You know, obviously, Brent was amazing at it. It's hard to... Yeah, you can't bite off the Kings, right? I mean, if it's your thing, you go with it. But I don't know. I feel like I'd be kind of trying to loan it. I feel like I would suck at it. Like that's a skill, man. They are so good at it.
Al is sort of like grandfathered in that he's allowed to do it. It's kind of funny.
Well, Al is like the greatest ever, so he's allowed to do anything. I think, right? I mean, I think whatever he wants to do, he could pretty much do.
All right, I saved this one for last because I didn't want to have any negativity throughout the interview. I know you love A-Rod, and A-Rod loves you. And I'm not an A-Rod guy. Tell me why I should be an A-Rod guy.
I think you should be an A-Rod guy because he would win you over like he did me. I knew him barely from, you know, when I was in New York from covering him a little bit, but I didn't have a relationship with him. I mean, I'd interviewed him, things like that, but I didn't know him. So when he got hired, I obviously asked a lot of my New York friends who dealt with him what to expect. I, you know, just did some homework, and they all said that his love for baseball, his smarts for baseball, you're going to love it, right? So, I mean, I'm going to go back to the first day when I worked with him. You know, he called and was like, hey, can you come in earlier today? And this is when he was still playing. We had him in, I think it was the ALCS a few years ago when he was still playing. So that was his first time with us. So he called, hey, can you come in earlier today than our meeting? I really want to go over some things. And He did a ton of homework. He could have easily come in and been A-Rod and, hey, I'm A-Rod and whatever and winged it. He came in. We went over, like, how to, you know, who to look at, how to turn to the camera, all these little nuanced questions that, honestly, I was amazing that he thought of because usually first-timers have no clue. And as far as the actual sport, he just lives the game. I mean, this is a guy that goes home and watches it nonstop on his phone, on his TVs. He's constantly living and breathing. So when we started, you know, to get to know each other, I'm like, okay, this guy, you know, I didn't know him before. I didn't know him when he went through all of his troubles. I didn't know him when he was suspended for a year. But all I know is my impression is he's still playing. He calls me early because he wants to be prepared. He comes in with a ton of homework for the show. Certainly doesn't have to do that. I'm like, this is a pretty good first impression, right? And then we just hit it off. I mean, I genuinely like him. I mean, he's, you know, we just have hit it off. I mean, and we've gone out to plenty of dinners and things like that. He's always treated me great. And you know, for me, Jimmy, I judge people by how I interact with them. You know, I there's plenty of people you come across who, I don't know, your friends tell you they suck or they're this or they're that. Well, you know, a lot of times maybe they're right, but I really do try to form my own opinion. So I have nothing but positive things to say about Alex. He's a friend of mine. He's a good friend of mine. So that's the best I can tell you, man. The guy prepares. He works his ass off, and he's a good dude. That's what I'll say about him.
All right, Al. I'll keep that in mind. You know what it is? It's just I'm a Yankee fan, and it just there was too much went on over the years. That's what it is. I can't put that aside I can't be professional as like you know a media person and say okay, but listen, you can't deny the fact that he has done a really good job remaking his image, and he has gotten great reviews for his studio work. So you got to give him credit for that. I'll say that.
Yeah. And look, I think the one thing which he, you know, business-wise was very smart about is that he was able to make fun of himself. You know, I think the first year that he was with us full-time, you know, he's on and he's constantly poking fun at himself. You know, at that time, Pete Rose was just killing him on a daily basis, and he loved it. Like, he would ask Pete, like, Pete, give it to me. You know, like, and I just thought, like, you know what, here's a guy that is obviously – there's been a lot going on in his career, a lot of media stuff and everything else. And I just thought that was a pretty good quality to have. Whether he's had that his whole life, I don't know. But I think he was pretty smart to embrace that and just be a normal guy who happens to have the second most RBIs of all time. So I think that was brilliant on his part.
Did you ever have nights where you were sitting there and you would look over and you would see A-Rod and Pete Rose and you'd be like, what the hell is my life right now? This is unbelievable.
You know, it's funny. I had friends text me, and I had friends text me a couple of years ago. We were in the playoffs. We were in that run, and our show was getting some hype. And my one buddy's like, did you just out of curiosity? Like, we're in a commercial break. He's like, just out of curiosity, have you looked who you're sitting next to tonight? Like, you're sitting at a desk, like, yucking it up with Frank Thomas, Pete Rose, and A-Rod. Like, and you're, you know, how the hell could you have predicted that? You know, it is crazy.
And J-Lo was probably back in the green room, too.
J-Lo was, she's been around a lot. She was in Houston last year for one of the post games. She came on the set. The crowd was chanting her name. It was sick.
She was there Sunday night when he did Dodgers-Giants on ESPN and gave him a kiss in between innings. Came in the booth.
She is ultra supportive. You know, she doesn't obviously know ins and outs, but she likes baseball. So it's kind of a good fit. But gosh, I've been out to dinners where she's been there, and it's nothing but baseball talk. But she's down with it. You know, give her a lot of credit, man.
That's amazing. Is J-Lo in your phone? Like, could you text J-Lo right now?
She is not on my phone.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. Trying to gauge the friendship there. All right.
That would be a whole nother level. Although I feel like I should just, you know, ask for the number, put it in the phone for like an hour just to say that it was in the phone. Maybe I'll ask. I see Alex today. Maybe I'll ask him if I could do that.
You should do that for sure. All right. I love the Nintendo story. It's so great. And I love the advice you gave for people. Just keep at it, and you know it's a great story. I'm happy for all of your success at Fox.
Jimmy, thanks, bro.
And now here's my conversation with WWE superstar Roman Reigns. Roman, how are you?
Doing good, man. How about yourself?
I'm well. Appreciate you doing this.
Oh yeah. Anytime, brother.
Where are you right now? I hear a lot of noise in the background.
I'm actually in the arena.
I'm in
Atlanta. I'm at Phillips now, so kind of just sitting in the crowd. It's either sit here and hear some noise of, you know, the set and the ring being built, or in the locker room with a bunch of crazy animals.
Right, playing video games.
They do a lot of stuff in there.
The last time I had you on my podcast, it was in August, and it was like our third or fourth interview, and I always enjoy interviewing you. I always request you with the WWE because I feel like, you're so different, I feel like, on these podcasts than what we see on TV, and I love that. And I remember you telling me the last podcast, you said that you had a tendency maybe to not always show up. You're always a little bit late to the arena? Were you there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still a thing.
That's still a thing?
That's what we call island time. It's just ingrained in my being, and being on time on a Monday just doesn't seem right.
I would think that's the day you have to be on time, considering you have a live television show.
That's my yard, man. me and the Shield brothers, we've been running like this for a while. We're pretty last minute guys, anyways. And a lot of times, too, we feel like if you dwell on something too long, you know what I mean, you can change your mind. Sometimes you got to go with that first instinct and just go with what you trust, and hopefully magic happens. But, yeah, it's never Ambrose has a really good quote. I can't give it, but there's a couple of reasons why we don't there's a couple of different types of people that make call time, and we're not either of those kind of people.
Oh, wait, why can't you give it?
Give it.
No.
Maybe one day. One day when we're all old and grizzled and gray and wrinkly.
I don't like you teasing me like
that. When everybody's not so sensitive on the internet, we'll be able to give that quote.
We'll get to maybe some internet sensitivity during this interview. But let's start. So you said something about making magic happen. It is WrestleMania week, and huge match at WrestleMania, Brock Lesnar for the title. I'm just curious, what is WrestleMania week like for you? Someone who's got a top match on the card. I'm not sure if it's the final match yet. I don't even know if you know that, but it's obviously one of the main event matches. What is this whole week like for you? Give me like sort of your daily, is it interviews all week? Do you do extra working out? Break down the week for me leading up to Sunday.
You know, it's kind of evolved over the years, you know, and it's funny because the first time that I had, you know, this huge responsibility of, you know, being in the main event or one of the main events, it was with Brock Lesnar, you know, so, and that was a crazy year for me, and coming from, you know, everybody, you know, and our media team and our talent relations, and they all told me this is one of the more aggressive schedules we've ever had for a talent, and it was a big test. So, you know, and it was something that I felt like I kind of passed, you know what I mean? And I did well. And it was all a learning experience, you know, 3 to 4 years ago. So it's gotten easier as the years have gone on, but it's still, a lot, you know what I mean? And regardless, you know, of, you know, how we're built up or portrayed on TV, I'm a human being and, you know, I deal with stress and, you know, I have nerves and, you know, fears just like everybody else. So when you have a lot of, a lot of pressure on you, a lot of responsibility, it can be tough and it can be, a bit awkward at times. But I think over the years, I've kind of really, learned this role and it had a lot of different experiences and, been under the gun and felt this responsibility before. So it's gotten a lot easier as the years gone by for me, but it's still awesome and it's still exciting. And, you know, like you said, there's a lot of different things that go into this, you know, this part of the year. You know, it's not just like a 1 week buildup. You know, we have talent and guys and girls that have been doing media and doing appearances and promoting for months now. And I think it's because it's just such a big time of year for us. This is kind of the crescendo of a hard year's work, and everybody wants to shine on this day. So I think whatever it is that you have to do to get yourself to that place to where you feel like you're going to steal the show or you're going to have that moment that's going to be remembered for all time, everybody has to kind of stay in their path and, you know, find their wheelhouse and what works for them. And for me, obviously it's recovery and staying healthy. But I like to be with my family, you know what I mean? I've been around long enough where I've, you know, and I still to this day, you know, have media obligations and different things that I need to do, you know, to help out, you know, each event and things like that. But, you know, the more you've done and the longer you've been in that role, you know, it gets a little easier and you get a little more time to kind of slow down and enjoy the process. And that's kind of where I'm at now. So me having two new boys and, you know, my daughter getting older and me getting a little bit older in this business now, I like to just kind of take my time and live in the moment and just enjoy it and just be with my family and make it as much about family as possible.
It's interesting that you would mention getting older. I think you made your WWE debut in 2012. So that's 6 years ago. How long do you feel like you've been in this business? Because obviously the body takes some toll and your schedule is insane. You're 43, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Or 42? 43? Do you feel
43?
Like,
Jesus. 42? What?
42. I'm sorry.
Good God, man.
I'm sorry.
It's either your eyes or I don't look the way I think I look. No, I don't, 32, man.
32. My math is off. Yeah. We got to edit that out. That's embarrassing.
42. Yeah. No. We want to keep this real.
No, because when I when I
Jimmy thought I was a decade older than I really am. This is crap.
Let me be.
You, we we might have to settle this in the ring, buddy.
Okay, listen. For the record, you should kick my ass over saying that. I don't blame you. Here's what happened. It's because of my horrific math skills. I saw you were born in 85, and for some reason, I somehow got to 42 from that instead of 32. So let me apologize.
You're trigger happy with these years.
I apologize. I apologize. Please don't hang up.
Accepted. All good.
I wouldn't blame you, though, if you did. I don't know how I got now. Good. Now you've my brain is so warped right now. Yeah,
it's great because it's going to bug you all.
Yeah, because I'm like
not knowing like if, somebody's name that you're like, who is that actor's name? I know his name. Now it's going to bug you all day.
Because I saw 85. I saw how did I get 42 from 85? How bad at math am I? Oh my god. Okay, so you're 32. Right.
The Monday slip up.
Yeah, yeah. I'm nervous about interviewing the guy who's going to win the belt Sunday. That's what it is. You're 32. How old do you feel? Let's get back to that.
You know, I still feel pretty good. You know what I mean? You know, physically, I feel like I've been in this business since, you know, 2000, like, you know, 8 years or so. And it takes a toll and there's no off season. And that's always the toughest thing for us is the recovery. If we can figure out a way how to recover in 2 days, you know, right before we go back out on the loop, that would be magic. That would just prolong and do so much for so many different superstars' careers. But you know, from a mental standpoint, I feel like I've been in this business a bit longer than I really have, you know, not only because I come from a wrestling family and I was born in it and I've just been around it on, you know, many different levels. You know, a lot of people think like, oh, all he knows is WWE and that's all his family, you know, but no, I mean, like many other wrestlers, there's ups and downs. And there were times when, you know, my parents my father and uncle and all my cousins and, you know, my relatives, they weren't just in WWE, you know, they were in independent scenes. They were, you know, in the territory days, they were bouncing around living out of their vans or their cars. So, you know, I've seen so many different facets and so many different levels of success and failure in this business. So in that, you know, from that state of mind, I feel pretty old and I feel like I've experienced quite a bit, not only just through myself, but, you know, through my peers and my relatives.
I think one of the things wrestling fans like myself, despite totally screwing up your age, one of the things wrestling fans know is the insanity of your schedule. And I'm not sure the casual or the non-fan knows just how insane the WWE superstar schedule is. Do you know now, like, when is your next full day off?
I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't really think I have real full days off because, you know, like most people, I'm a father as well and a husband. So sometimes my, you know, the most responsibility I have or, you know, the longest days I have is when I get home,
right.
You know, because my wife, you know what I mean? We have a household that she is just a master at running. And when I come home, it seems like I mess up the whole process. But on top of that, I have to kind of help her out and give her some time to, you know, have a life as well and
right.
get out and run some errands and do some things for her. So
do you,
I try to, you know,
do you take
you
out
know,
the garbage
in as quick as possible?
Do you take out the
garbage? Yeah, I do all that.
You take out the garbage.
So. Yeah, man. We keep it really normal. Like, I have like a couple neighbors and stuff who have like nannies and, you know, like, maids and stuff like that, and we're hard, you know, to let people in, or there's like a weird trust thing with us, but
right.
we just it's really hard to, like, you know, not just be like a regular person and do the regular chores and household things and watch your kids. So I don't know, just having a maid and having like somebody foreign and not, you know, a part of our family in our house at all times is just still really weird. So I think we're just going to kind of stick with the routine we have and just try and handle it all on our own as, you know, as the two parents.
Since you brought up something weird and creepy, I'm going to go in a totally different direction other than WrestleMania, because we know you got WrestleMania coming up Sunday against Brock Lesnar. It's been a great feud.
Yep.
Another WrestleMania big match for you. You've wrestled The Undertaker there. You've wrestled Lesnar before. You got Lesnar again. But since you mentioned, you know, someone living in your house being a little weird, you tweeted something last week, which was really creepy, where you went into a store, looked like a 7-Eleven type of store, and whoever I guess works there put the surveillance video of you on Twitter, and you retweeted it and said it was creepy. And the other thing is there was nothing to the video. You like walked in and bought a pack of gum or something. I don't know what the
That was just weird. You know what I mean? And the bad thing is the guy was really nice. Like they didn't have a public restroom, and I all I had to do was pee. And he allowed me to go behind. You can see me go like behind the register or whatever, and they allowed me to use the restroom. And then from there, I just went and bought a couple of waters. And I don't know. It was just weird. It was like when someone was like, you know, kind to you, and like we had a little tiny conversation as I was checking out, and then to just see that, like it's just a little weird. And even, you know, when you've been in the public eye or you're considered a celebrity or whatever, you know, whatever they say, you'll never get used to situations like that. People, you know, watching you from like a different room. It'll just never be a part of my being or, you know, the fibers that make it. Of my makeup to where I'm just like, yeah, that's cool. People watch me secretly. Like,
well, also to put it on Twitter,
it's a little weird.
Yeah,
you know? Like, and I don't know the legality of all that, and like if someone can get in trouble for using security surveillance as like a Twitter feed, but either way, it was just a little weird. But I didn't mean to really like put the guy on blast, but he was a nice guy. He's just a little weird.
Well, you
put me on blast.
Absolutely. How did you see that? Did you just you just scrolling through your mentions and you saw it?
Yeah, I was just going through a timeline, going through my timeline. Yeah, just scrolling through, and it was just randomly there, and it just threw me off. So, just the weird things you deal with, man.
Very weird. I'm going to shift back since we're talking about a guy who's supposedly a fan. You've always had this, probably the most interesting relationship with the fans of any superstar lately. The last several years. Give me where do you feel like you're at with the WWE Universe when you're performing and you're on Monday Night Raw?
I don't know, because it's always different. You know what I mean? It's never just like a percentage. You know what I mean? It's never just like it's always 50-50 or it's 60-40. I think what has really helped me progress and kind of grow as a performer is that it's different for me just about every single night, so I have to adjust. I have to do little things, and even if they don't seem like, you know, like they're minute things, but it's all little things that add up that makes a big thing. And that's why there's, you know, several times you can see where I start a match or start a segment and they hate me, and then all of a sudden I catch a win, or you know, we get down to the final of a match and they're all standing and they're cheering. So that's just kind of been a part of the process of my performance, and I think it's made me better for it.
I feel like one of the big things with you the last few years has always been the talk of, should he go full heel, turn him heel? I feel like that sort of died down. Am I correct in that assessment, or do you still hear a lot of that?
I think just because it's me, I do hear quite a bit of that still, but not nearly as much. I think you are right. Like, it has calmed down quite a bit, but I still get, you know, and which is funny to me because, like, you'll see people be like, as soon as he goes heel, I'm cheering him. He's my favorite. Right. But and I've heard, like, other people explain it that are in the business, guys like Triple H, but, like, if I get the loudest boos, whether I'm getting, you know, cheers as well or whatever the response is, if it's the loudest and it is negative, doesn't that make me the top heel? You know what I mean? Like, regardless, whatever we present on television as a product, the crowd is going to do what the crowd does. So I still think, you know, there's like a, it's like a dual controllership. You know what I mean? Like, we're all holding the remote here. And for me, I think if I were just to commit to one thing, I'd be doing myself like an injustice, because right now I think my character is the most well-rounded it could be, because I can do anything now.
Right.
Like, I literally can take any reaction and react, you know, and send back my own emotion, and it could either make the people, you know, like me more or hate me more, but regardless, the place is going to be on fire and go nuts, and whoever's out there with me is going to benefit from these reactions. And we're probably going to both come out smelling like roses at the end. And that's the goal. You know what I mean? And that's the key to having this responsibility, is making everybody step up and everybody feel that level that, you know, is the top.
I said this to you when we did an interview back in August and we talked about it at length. Your promo the day after WrestleMania last year is still one of my all-time favorite things in wrestling. I think it's like a top five promo of all time. And the only thing you said was, this is my yard. So obviously, you know how to work the fans pretty good if you can pull that off.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I just think, you know, and it wasn't like any other promo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not just because it was a few words. It took so many different things that went into that, you know, that night before the night even happened, you know what I mean?
Right.
The night before, you know what I mean? The fact that I beat The Undertaker, the fact that, you know, there was the retirement tease, you know, with the, which I still think was is so cool to see that footage back of the folding of the jacket and the hat laying, you know. There's just something so symbolic and so just neat about that. It's like goosebump stuff. And when you kind of tie all that stuff together, it's all those little things that added up to a very big thing. And you just saw the reaction come from the people. And, you know, typically at WrestleMania and the night after WrestleMania, that is like a huge, you know, nucleus of our hardcore fans, you know, like the fans that have been there for a long time, every single year in and year out, they make it to WrestleMania, and they make sure they make it to, you know, that Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania. And they came full, you know, full force at me, and it made for an awesome moment. And I think it just goes back to, you know, the work that I put in, but a lot of, you know, the work of The Undertaker and the legacy and the respect that they have for him. And it just made for a perfect storm that night.
I was nervous about asking you this, but since I already embarrassed myself, I'm just going to go for it. And if you never do an interview with me again, I'll live with it, even though you're one of my favorites. I'm going to just throw this out there. There was a Monday Night Raw, I don't know, maybe over the summer. You were in the ring with John Cena going back and forth. And I think you forgot your lines. And I thought it was funny because I mess up your age. That was great because it was real. And if on live TV someone flubs their lines, it's funny. When that happened, what was going through your head? And am I a dick for bringing that up?
Oh, no. I mean, like you said, it's live television. And, you know, anything I've been a part of, I did it. So, you know what I mean? It's a part of me. Well, what happened is I ad-libbed a little bit because, like, something was going on with the crowd. I think they were chanting something like Cena sucks. So I used that, and it threw me off a bit. And, right. Like, the moment I took a second, John's really good at just chiming in, and he just started going to town with that, with his own ad-libs. And you can see it starting to piss me off because, like, each time I tried to say something, he was quick to, like, just kind of cut me off.
Right.
And eventually I have to get to the piece that I'm going to say. So it actually did, like, a huge favor for me because you can kind of see where I boil over, where it becomes, like, screw the lines. Like, I don't care if I remember them or if I forget them.
Right.
I'm going, you know what I mean?
Right.
And he kind of gave me that screw it, you know what I mean? That, like, forget it, let's go. And I think from there it was almost like a gear change for me, and from there on I feel like I've kind of been on all cylinders and just finding, you know, my voice and finding myself, you know, each night, you know.
Yeah.
From, you know, promo to promo. And I think, you know, John, you know, being so good and just being the veteran and the top guy that he is, and when I say, you know, that it's when you're on top, it's your job to push the guy, you know, to that level. That's what he did for me. And I'll always be grateful for that. But yeah, you know what I mean? Crap happens out there, but,
yeah.
You know, we got it done and, you know, I thought it worked out fine, but, you can't ever really be ashamed, you know, if John Cena, you know, burns you a little bit on the mic, but
yeah.
I thought I did a good job of, you know, finding myself and recovering and, delivering a couple good promos after that.
Of course. Well. Yeah. It was a good moment too. I think anything like that happens, people love to see something like that. And it's not a laugh at you thing; it's a laugh with you thing. So, I think, you know, it's a cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this business, you know, whether you're a good guy, bad guy, or a gray area guy, if you can't, you know, deal with being a little embarrassed or wearing some egg on your face, then you're in the wrong situation.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, when it comes down to it, this is, you know, sports entertainment. So,
all right,
it's all kind of a part of the gig.
I'm gonna finish here. I'll do some rapid fire questions. Most of these are just fun and lighthearted, nothing major. Things we've maybe discussed in the past, and go through these quick. Well, let me ask you, do you get it as a, I would imagine every superstar wrestler, whatever you want to say, must not like it when people come up to them suggesting storylines. How do you feel? Is that something that annoys you?
It just depends. You know what I mean? I think like everybody else, it depends on what kind of mood you're in, you know,
right.
Like I said, you know, we're humans. So like, sometimes we're doing, you know, with a crazy travel day, or like we've been delayed or canceled, and like I'm sitting in the airport for 6 hours, and if I'm not as cordial, it's because I'm frustrated with my life at the moment, you know what I mean? So I think for me, it just depends on what kind of mood I'm in, you know, if I want to hear wrestling stuff or not. But it, you know, it just depends. Like, you know, if I'm in mid set, I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, if I'm in the gym and I'm like, you know what I mean, whatever I'm doing, mid squat or mid bench press, I don't care if Arnold Schwarzenegger wants to come up and talk to me and give me tips about working out. I don't want to talk to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I just want that me time. But, you know, for me, it really depends on, you know, where I'm at in that day. And a lot of times I don't mind. Sometimes, you know, I'll have full conversations with fans and just, you know what I mean? And sometimes it'll blow their mind. Like,
that's awesome.
Like, it was almost like he wanted to talk to me more than I wanted to talk to him. You know, because sometimes we're bored and we've been sitting in an airport or like, you know, in a car all day long, and we've seen the same people over and over and over. And sometimes you just want to talk to somebody new, you know what I mean? Just something random if you can, you know?
My suggestion is you win the belt Sunday against Lesnar. You come out on Raw, and I don't know, they work it where somehow Daniel Bryan shows up on Raw, even though he's on SmackDown, and he's going to be the biggest babyface because he's coming back now. You kick the crap out of him. You do the full heel turn. You wrestle him at next year, WrestleMania. There's my storyline suggestion.
That's pretty easy, man.
All right, good. All right. Let
it doesn't get much easier than Daniel Bryan.
All right, good. I know you're a Niners fan. You got to be so pumped up about Jimmy Garoppolo.
I am skeptical.
Really?
Yes.
Explain.
Well, you know what I mean? It's a situation where we're going off of, what, 5 or 6 good games, and, of course, he was the backup to Tom Brady, but so was, what's his name, Castle back
yeah,
in the
Matt
day?
Yeah, Matt Castle, yeah.
He had a few good years and stuff like that, but once he went to Kansas City, it wasn't the same. So I want to see him do a full year. I want to see him, you know, earn a playoff berth and do some things, especially when, I don't know, is he the highest paid quarterback now? Like, he's up there.
Right? He got paid. He got paid.
He got crazy money off of 5 games. So I have to be skeptical as a lifelong 49ers fan. You need a good quarterback, but I'm a firm believer in defensive line, and building that rotation, because it seems like every year it's the defense that kind of steps up and wins it for these teams. You know, when it comes down to the nitty gritty, it's always that defense.
It's an interesting. I haven't heard any Niners fans say they're skeptical. So that's interesting. That's a good take by you. Every time I've interviewed you, I've mentioned to you that you fascinate me because you follow 0 people on Twitter. And I remember you saying you don't care about John Cena's workouts and Dolph Ziggler's stand up. But now you follow 3 people. What made you take the plunge?
I was like, man, let's do it. And if you look at it, it's like three of them are cousins, which 2 of them are Usos, so they share one. And then the other is Georgia Tech, you know, especially I'm in Atlanta right now. I was late for this interview because I was at Georgia Tech working out. So it was good reason.
Right, right.
That wasn't just island time. That was like, I was getting stuff done.
Listen, I'm glad you showed up at all after I called you 43 years old, so.
Yeah, I'm still here. So, as a 43-year-old man,
you're hanging in there.
Rolling.
So 3 people on Twitter. But, all right. We're making progress with you. And
who knows? It could be 5 next year.
But I notice you don't follow The Rock. He's one of your cousins.
He don't need any help. He should follow me.
He follows me. He doesn't follow you?
Yeah. I have no clue. I don't know this stuff, man. Like,
no,
he's like a genius when it comes to the Twitter, though. Like,
yeah,
it's almost as if he was born for social media. Like, he literally has it down to a T. I don't know. I think I'm right at that age. Like, older folks, not that he's an older folk, but he's older folk. they really like, you know what I mean? Like, the old timers really like social media. There's something about it that they just really dig. And I think I'm just at that age where it's just not that interesting to me, just because, like, I grew up with PlayStations and stuff like that. Like, they had, like, what do you have, like an Atari or something like that? Like an Nintendo at best.
ColecoVision, you know, so. Intellivision, I don't know if there's anybody who does social media better than him. He definitely, his team knows what they're doing. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I honestly think he has a lot to do with it, too. It's not like he has a great team and all, but I think he has, you know, like a lot of ideas, and he has his hands tied into all of that. Yeah. And I think kind of that's what makes him and his team so strong is that he is so hands-on. So that there's always something to learn from, you know, someone who's done what you're doing or you know, on a different level than you. So he that's a good learning curve for whenever I want to take social media a little bit more serious. Maybe I need to tap into his his playbook and rip a page out or two.
I pulled one of those douche moves that people do on Twitter, and I was like, can you follow me? And he followed me. But, I mean, I've written about him a million times on SportsIllustrated.com, so I think he knew who I was.
If you're going to ask for a follow, I don't think that's a bad ask. You know what
I
mean?
Oh, okay. So. All right. I got like people thinking it was the coolest thing, and then people making fun of me for asking. But you know, such is life.
That's the world we live in, right there, man.
Here's a weird one. Vince is starting the XFL again. You played football. You mentioned Georgia Tech, and you did the CFL, I think, for 3 years. Would you ever think post wrestling, like maybe if an XFL team needs a coach or something like that, would that be something that interests you, or any involvement at all in the XFL with your football background?
Not really.
No.
Yeah, I hate to not like show too much interest in it, but I football is always going to be like a big part of my life because it helped me out tremendously and just really built so many different foundations for me that I still stand on today. But I really like where I'm at, you know what I mean? And I'm a father now, I'm not sure if you have children, but as most fathers know, it's a very demanding job in its own right. But like, if I were to have to, if I were to kind of dive back into football, I would want it to be something that would to do with Georgia Tech. Just going back there and just the tradition and still to this day, you would still think I'm on the team. The way they treat me there, the hospitality, the love that all the coaches and all the staff still have for me, and just how welcoming they always are. I would definitely love to do something to tie back into Georgia Tech and just be a part of that tradition and that culture again.
I'm sure they'd love to have you. All right, last question, because I'm sure you got to run, and I appreciate all the time you've given me. We've talked about this a couple of times, too. You're a big Seinfeld fan. I think the last time I spoke to you, I told you you should get into Curb Your Enthusiasm if you're a Seinfeld fan. And you said you might give it a try, but I think you just said that, like, to be a nice guest. But have you watched any of Curb Your Enthusiasm at all?
Well, since I'm 43 years old, I'm going to gladly say no. All right. I haven't even thought about it.
If you like Seinfeld, you'll love Curb.
I actually literally have. I think about it. Every time I either see anything to do with Curb, I automatically think of you and what a jerk I am. I still haven't even
You're such a liar. You don't. That's
a lie. I haven't even attempted.
All right. Well, I'll say,
promise, man. I promise. Me and my old age, we keep forgetting.
All right. What about The Office? Did you watch The Office?
No, but it literally everybody I say that to, they're like, "You're an idiot. You need to watch that show." Workaholics is another one.
I'm not going to call you an idiot since I already called you 43, but you should watch.
Yeah, you've done enough, Jimmy.
The Office. You should watch The Office. All right,
I will.
I got
a lot of shows I got to get down on, but that's a part of the road being on this travel team is
The Office.
We have a lot of time for watching stuff.
Then, if you ever do another interview with me again after I insulted you, I'm going to check in about The Office. That's very important that you get on that.
All right, we moved from Curb to The Office.
Yeah,
okay.
Because I just got into The Office, so put Curb on hold and to go to The Office. That'll be right up your alley. You'll like it.
All right,
Roman, thanks so much.
For real.
WrestleMania Sunday, WWE Network, Brock Lesnar. Go get the belt.
Well, don't jinx me, but thanks for having me, Jimmy.
All right, my thanks to Kevin Burkhart of Fox Sports. Really great interview with him and Roman Reigns of the WWE WrestleMania this Sunday. I think Roman's going to beat Brock Lesnar and win the belt, which will be interesting to see how fans of the WWE handle that since he's a polarizing figure. So hopefully you enjoyed both interviews. We'll see you next week on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.